It's Caulfield and Company, live on location.
What? Just don't even touch it, buddy.
Love that trash can right now. Harper Lender.
Dame time is here. It's time.
Whoa!
It's time for Caulfield and Company with Steve Caulfield on ESPN Las Vegas.
See, first of all, I know these
Back it up.
Players would tell you this, but I'm gonna be real and say what's on my
heart. All mushy this week. Keep it going, crank it up. I know it's gonna run out soon. Down with it. All right, Ethel M. Chocolates Henderson is the site for the show today. It's Caulfield and Company on the road. Last year we were out here and got amazing response. We've got signups for a future Vegas Golden Knights game, but don't come by for that. Come by to take advantage of all the delectables at Ethel M. Chocolates. You can get those chocolate dipped strawberries. You can watch them make them right here at the factory. And big hit last year, big hit this year, the XO Cognac Truffles. So come on in. It's right at Sunset, where Sunset turns, and Mountain Vista. If you haven't been here, really cool place. The factory's here. The gift shop is gigantic. They've got the Cactus Garden, which in a few hours will be all lit up. And Adam Hill and I had a nice romantic walk through the Cactus Garden last year. It was lovely, and we cemented our bond. We decided to do the show for another year. Now, the sad part is Adam Hill's not here, and in the first 5 minutes, I was going to once again cement that bond and lock in another year, but who knows what's going to happen now. I may be moody on a Monday. Ari's back in our Findlay Toyota studios. We are here at Ethel M. Come on by. You get that chance to win the Vegas Golden Knights tickets and check out their gift shop. And here's the most important thing. Valentine's Day is later in the week. It's at the end of the week. If you're listening right now, there's no need to screw things up by procrastinating. Come on a Monday, and then all the sweat is gone from your brow the rest of the week because you're all set here, courtesy of Ethel M. Chocolates. All right, let's do it.
It's time for the three. Presented by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call him today at 577-2600.
This weekend was potentially revolutionary in sports, both in basketball and football. We're going to get to the XFL, which I saw a lot of people kind of yawn at, but I don't know that folks were paying attention to all the crazy rules that they're trying out in the XFL. We're going to get to that in the next half hour. But the other cool thing that went down was the beginning of the Rockets experiment. Rockets played two games this weekend. If you don't know what happened around the trade deadline, well, the Rockets decided, you know what, Mike D'Antoni wants to play small ball. The Rockets want to go five out. There's no reason to have big guys anymore. So screw it. We're getting rid of our big guys. All we're going to have on the roster are a bunch of 6'8", 6'7", dudes. And we're playing five out. And we're going to put it to the test. The other team can try to get their bigs on the floor and, in theory, would be able to crush us, the Rockets, by rebounding, just killing us on the boards. I'm speaking as a member of the Rockets, killing us on the boards and easy points inside. But that's not exactly what happened in both the Lakers game and the game against the Jazz. Adam Hill is here. I'm fascinated by the Rockets story. So we didn't get to talk last week about what the Rockets are trying to do. They rolled it out the first two times this weekend. You must love it because you're a master strategist. You want to go against the grain. And it worked. It worked against the Lakers. Lakers were like, wait, what's going on here? Because all of a sudden now, if you want to play JaVale McGee, hashtag bumass, according to Shaq, or you want to play your big star Anthony Davis, well, they're going to have to play on the perimeter most of the game defensively. And if you ISO guys in space, now they're going to have to cover dribble drive. I think Anthony Davis can do that. I don't think JaVale McGee can do that. And then the Jazz, of course, have a 7-2 player in Rudy Gobert watching, and the Jazz wound up winning the game at the very end, so they split this weekend trying small ball. And the Jazz were plus 12 on the boards. I think the Lakers were plus 2 or 3, so the rebounding didn't go that badly for the Rockets. But just watching the floor spread and then bigs get switched on to Russell Westbrook or Harden as they go downhill It's awesome.
No, I love the concept, and I think it's great in theory, and it's good to watch it right now actually play out. I think you have to have a guy, though, and he doesn't
one
have to play
guy.
That much. You have to have a guy that's capable of, hey, okay, we need to change it up right now. We need to go with a more traditional offense. We need to figure this out. We need, especially defensively, we might need a guy in the middle at some point. Teams are going to start figuring out what to do with him as they kind of watch it.
If there's a buyout candidate, you would suggest pick up a 6'10 dude who's decent, who can play D.
Just a dude.
Just to have a guy for 10 or 12 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay. I can buy that.
I think you want to have that option. Because right now, yes, it's working because teams are like, wait, what is going on here?
I'm telling you, when they...
Like, what is this team doing?
When they were spreading and Rudy Gobert was having to defend 23 feet in the basket, it was freaking awesome.
Right.
And then Gobert's not good enough offensively that he's just going to kill you inside. So you have the advantage there. But I'm telling you, when they... Every guy on the floor for the Rockets can go downhill or shoot the three.
Yeah. Yes. And that's why it's such a matchup nightmare. But again, I think this is teams like, okay, they're really going to do this? Are they really going to do this? And then they get on the court like, oh my God, they're really doing it. And at some point, I think you need to at least figure out how to change it up a little bit, how to give them a different look. Because right now, like, yeah, teams are just kind of thrown off by it and caught off guard. At some point, they're going to say, okay, we're just going to slow it down like crazy, really just grind out the game. And then what are you going to do? When we go start posting guys up and grinding out every possession and really wearing you down, what are you going to do about that? And teams really haven't done it yet because I think they weren't ready for exactly how it was going to go.
Do you think a handful of teams will try it next year?
No.
No one else will try it?
No, I think people will try. But
they'll
again,
have one big on the roster.
You need to have the option.
Okay.
And I think that is where it's going to be different. And yes, like how long have we heard coaches talking about wanting to play positionless basketball?
Mm-hmm.
Like that is a phrase that is thrown around all over the place, and it means nothing because teams won't really commit to it. Because they're like, we want positionless basketball, but then you have like a 7-foot guy that can't move. Like, what? That's a position. He plays center.
I'm telling you, and I've been talking about it the last couple of days, especially since I saw that Nemanja Keita, the 7'1", 240 guy for Utah State, I don't know where those guys have a spot in the game anymore outside of like 15 minutes off the bench, especially against small ball teams. And the same thing goes, like, that guy might not get drafted. Vernon Carey's amazing. He's come out averaging like 17 and 10. He's 6'10", 270, son of a NFL offensive lineman. He's at Duke. And all of a sudden, they're like the running back now. It's like, yeah, we'll take him 15, 20, 25, second round. We don't want a guy who's over 250.
Well, I know he was almost an all-star, but what about Taco Fall? Like, where is his role in the league?
Just a specialist.
Where is his
role?
I mean,
he was always going to be a specialist anyway, right. but his the potential of him playing 30 minutes a game against small ball, he's got no shot.
No, none. No, what, I mean, you're just gonna go right at him every time and make him defend screens or, you know, opt to either hedge off a screen or to try to stay with a guy. Like, you're going to just destroy them.
So it's a mixed weekend in the NBA in terms of, you know, strategy and, well, more importantly, Jazz games and results and what happened at the end of the game. So the Jazz actually came through in back-to-back games, but the Friday night game against the Blazers, oh, boy. The officials... They did it again. They missed a horrible goaltend. Gobert went up.
Obvious.
Layup. Ball bounces off the backboard. Then he hits it. This was the very end of the game as the Blazers didn't win it. And freaking Dame Lillard goes crazy a la. And I don't know how many people saw this. TJ Otzelberger. Like, it was a test between the two of them. Who went crazier? He was mad.
Utah. With the help of a horrendous missed call, holds on to a 117-114 victory. And you could see Damian Lillard is rightly irate as his heroic effort comes up short thanks to that egregious missed goaltend.
He is. He's 100% right. He is 100% right. I'm going to compliment Josh Tiven. They screwed up. The officials absolutely missed his call.
Yeah, she was complimenting the official based on his behavior, which is funny that we have to compliment officials because what didn't the ref do? Go over and start jawing with Damian right. Lillard. Because Lillard, it was funny. The game ends because it was, you know, this is after the goaltend. The game ends and Lillard puts his arms out in like that huffy position and starts walking at the ref. I'm like, well, is he going to go hit him?
I wouldn't have blamed him.
It was terrible.
It was
and
awful.
Then the NBA comes out today and they're like, sorry.
Well,
our bad, and Lillard responded by retweeting it and saying, we don't want to hear this punk-ass blank.
Right. And you don't blame him either.
And you know what? If you say that, if you retweet that, if you, you know, puff up and start walking in menacing fashion at an official, and they apologize for a bad call, should you be fined?
No.
Should the player be fined?
No. And I think that's what the NBA did. Unless they changed their mind, I thought the initial ruling from the NBA was that there was going to be no discipline, because there shouldn't be. Like, that was on you. And by the way, these are massive things. Like, players, you know, first of all, just making the playoffs, and the Blazers may not make the playoffs, and this could be a major reason why. Like, they're fighting fighting for their life, but they, you know, and you could say, well, you should have won more games early in the year, and they probably should have. But this could be the reason they don't make the playoffs, which is, you know, part of the player's brand. It's part of their endorsement money. All of those things are increased exponentially by playing in the playoffs on the biggest stage. You may have taken that away because your referee screwed up. There should not be repercussions against that. Listen, if you would have punched the ref, sure. But just getting angry and puffing up and expressing it and sending out tweets of how egregious this call was, those should all be fine. Once you admit that the call was wrong, it should be okay. You can do what you want.
Well, you know, the officials have had a good game when both coaches in a college basketball game want to punch them in the face. And at different points in the UNLV Fresno State game, that happened. We'll talk about the Altenberger tee a little later on. But at the end of the game, Justin Hutson was really angry. Angry one, because he lost the game as the Rebels come up with a clutch shot off the glass by Marvin Coleman. Here's the TV call.
They've got time. A foul is just as good as a layup.
Fans come to their feet. Tillman out to Coleman. Coleman puts it up. Banks it in with 2/10 of a second to go. Oh, it's the Vegas NATO.
Great shot. Talked to Marvin Coleman after the game. He was like, oh, yeah, I meant for it to go off the glass. He actually didn't. No, he was like, I threw it up there.
Yeah.
He's like, I just wanted to get up near the basket, and turns out to be fundamentals. Left side, leaner, high off the glass. That's what we want from the kids these days.
Yeah, it's a bad shot.
It was fortunate. It was it was very fortunate. Then this is a moment you must love, because this is a great test of strategy, as Fresno has 0.8 of a second left. Really, all you can do is throw a bomb down the floor, quickly catch it, and shoot it. And there were timeouts back and forth. Each coach saw the setup. So they wanted to set up defense and offense. And Fresno decides to go with a play where they're going to have a player run in front of the guy defending the inbounds and try to draw the offensive foul. Here's John Sandler at the end of the game as Fresno State's trying to get off a shot, and he sees it immediately what Fresno's trying to do here.
Holland inbound. Holland, and they do run that play where they try to buy a foul. It goes to Hart. He launches it. No good. And the Rebels win the game. Fresno State wanted the foul on that screen along the baseline. They didn't get it. And the officials are hearing it from the Fresno State coaches.
So what do you think? Was it a foul?
No. Well, here's the thing. I've never believed that it should be anyway. I don't think that should be a call. They have called it at times.
Really? I figured you'd love something like that. That's skirting the I don't know if it's being a bad sport. It's smart. It's smart to try it.
First of all, of course it's smart to try it.
So I figured you'd love it.
I can't believe that wasn't UNLV's plan, by the way.
They weren't aware of it?
I can't believe – I'm sitting there watching the game like, oh, man, they're going to run that play. And then
– Otzelberger was on the floor the corner, and he's pointing at Mbaké. I figured at that point he's telling him. Maybe Mbaké didn't hear him.
That's what I thought, too. It's just such a weird thing. Now, again, for those that weren't watching it, if you're just kind of listening to it, what they do is you set a screen on the baseline and then have the inbounder run the baseline out of bounds. So you're really not even looking to make a play. All you're looking to do is kind of take a charge, for lack of a better term. I never in my life have believed that a guy setting a screen can be taking a charge, ever.
Right.
And I don't mean that on that baseline play, out on the court. Once you set a screen, you're setting a screen to get in somebody's way. That's not a foul.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not. Now, it has been called, as you said. They've made the call before. I understand why teams do it. There was no chance of getting a shot off, no. So why not try to buy a foul? But here's the other problem. If you watch from the baseline angle, he moved his feet.
Yeah, he moved his feet. And also, he started to dip backwards before Mbaké even hit him, which actually you can now call. They can call flops. I'm surprised they haven't called the head throws more. I've only seen two in person at UNLV games with the guards. The guards are being allowed to head, throw the head back again as I lose my headphones.
So obnoxious.
Yes.
And again, if you're Justin Hutson, sure, you're mad at the officials, be mad at your kid too. Your only job is to stand still and take a guy running into you. Now, I get that's a giant guy.
Yeah, he's trying to block a 6'10 dude.
Sure, but your only job, all you can do, there's nothing else you can do except set your feet and just take the blow, and he wouldn't do it. He moved his feet at the last second, and that becomes not a foul. So even if you do think it should be a call, it's not because he didn't set his feet and he fell backward. That's all they had, though. That's all they had there, though, so you don't blame him for trying it. It's just ridiculous that that's even possible in a game for that to be a call.
We'll talk about the very end of the game, the game winner on the way back. Also get into the XFL. Apparently, Adam didn't watch a whole lot of it because I'm telling you, this is your league. There are so many new rules they're trying and so much strategy at hand. I think you're going to love it.
The Three is brought to you by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call today at 577-2600 to receive a $500 coupon towards your appraisal or any purchase or refinance. Dial up Dustin now. 577-2600.
And Mbake gives it to Hardy. Rebels down one. 10 seconds to go. Hardy front court. Hardy kicks the ball to Tillman. Tillman on the baseline. Out to Coleman. Coleman with three. Coleman, tough shot from the right side. Banks in! And with 0.2 seconds to go, the Rebels have the lead!
Now, back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Ari, is that for Marvin Coleman making the shot or for Adam Hill and his favorite boy band?
That one.
Not a boy band.
Boyz II Men.
Not a boy band.
But yeah, he's right. It's a R&B group.
It's an R&B group.
My bad.
So does NSYNC, by the way. I'll stand by that forever. They're not a boy band.
I'll stand by that forever.
They're not a boy band.
Let's fight.
It's an R&B group.
Marvin Coleman, you hear the game winner from Learfield and John Sandler on the call. Miraculous shot. Interesting game against Fresno State. A game they needed to win. Listen, in the end, they have to be playing their best basketball for the Mountain West Conference Tournament. So if they had lost this game, it's not a total disaster. It's a bad look. You know, you're going against a team that's 8-16 coming in and 4-8 in conference. Fresno's got an interesting mix of players, and I don't know that Justin Hudson has figured out who he should be playing yet. And we're 25 games into the season. He's got some talent. I'll say this. It's going to sting for a while. I said it after the first game against Fresno State about Orlando Robinson. What a freaking disaster by Marvin Menzies and company. The dude is at Fresno State now. He had 24 points in the game this weekend. He had a big game the first time around. He's 6'10", 235, can face the basket. You know, one thing he's got to get better at is defending on the perimeter. But, you know, if that's the only thing you're complaining about, a 6'10", 235 guy when he's averaging, you know, 12.5 and 6.5 rebounds, that's pretty good. That one's going to sting for a while.
The Rockets wouldn't want him.
Actually, I think he can be the big in a – I think he – he's actually the modern big man where he can be the one when there's four outside.
Yeah, perhaps. But I mean, the Rockets are
Rockets are 5-0, right? Yeah. Sure. So Marvin Coleman hits basically at the buzzer. Was listening a little bit today. Also reading Tyler Bischoff from Technically Correct. He wrote that Marvin Coleman saved T.J. Otzelberger from criticism. What do you think the criticism would have been for?
I would have said. First of all, losing to a Fresno State team that's really struggled and continuing your losing streak. But I think the main thing is, once again, and it's been a recurring theme in this program through both coaches, end-of-game situations have not been pretty. And the numbers suggest that they've been better under Otzelberger than they were under Menzies because they've actually made shots at the end of the games, but they're not getting the best looks. That's not a good look. That's not a look that you say, hey, we drew up a play, we got the shot we wanted, whether it goes in or not, you get the shot that you wanted. That's what you want out of the end of the game. You want to get a good shot. That's not a good shot. It went in. So it covers a lot of that. But that's certainly not something you look back at and say, hey, we executed the way we wanted to at the end of the game.
So specifically, if I can say it, Bischoff was saying the criticism on T.J. Otzelberger would have been for not calling a timeout. He had at least one timeout. He could have used it to set things up. It works in the end, but Tyler explains here what the criticism would have been for.
Because UNLV did not get a good shot. And Otzelberger had two timeouts left when they got that rebound with 13 seconds left, down by 1 point. Regardless of the actual outcome, though, I actually enjoy him not calling a timeout. I agree with him not calling a timeout. We've heard many times T.J. Otzelberger say that he doesn't think his team can basically out-execute a set defense. right? He wants this team to try to score early in the shot clock because he doesn't think they're good enough to, hey, if they're set, we're going to just out-execute them. So UNLV gets a rebound with 13 seconds left, down by one. Their best chance to score is to just dribble the ball straight to the rim and get a layup.
Agree?
True. Yeah, I think so.
Bedlam is better than trying to set up because he's mentioned a million times this year, once a defense is set up, his team is just not real effective in a half-court situation.
And I think that's for most teams. I mean, I'm kind of the belief, for the most part, you get a rebound in that situation, you go and see what you can get out of transition. Now, the benefit of having timeouts, a lot of coaches want to overmanage and just call it right away and say, hey, let me set something up, because they think that they're smarter than everybody else. I think the proper thing to do is what he did, except for the second part of it, because to me, it's push it. With 13 seconds, you get it up the floor, you see what you can get in the break. And if nothing's there, if somebody pulls it out and starts dribbling around, then you call the timeout. And maybe you have 5 or 6 seconds to then say, okay, what can we design out of this? Now, what they didn't do that, though. They just kept going, and even though nothing was materializing, they just let it play out. And eventually Marvin Coleman dribbles to that side of the floor over on the left side and then throws something at the rim that goes in, and everybody goes off and celebrates. Now, to me, once it started to hit a wall of, like, nothing's happening here, that's when I would have called a timeout. But I have no problem not calling a timeout right away and just seeing what you can get out of the initial break.
Adam, don't you just put the ball in the hands of your most clutch player and hope for the best?
Who's that? I don't think there's any such thing.
Mike Romala sent out a tweet. He said, in the final 5 minutes, Marvin Coleman, final 5 minutes, the second half in overtime, when the score is within 5 points, he's 5 of 8 on field goals, 4 of 6 on threes, 4 of 4 on free throws. Dude has been clutch season.
I think that sounds like a sarcastic tweet.
No, I think he believes in clutch. You're the only one who doesn't believe in clutch. You and the numbers nerds.
There's no such thing.
Analytics again, dorks.
What I always point out to people is everybody points out to Kobe Bryant being the most clutch player of all time, and I understand it's a sensitive subject now.
Rest in peace.
Everybody says,
you were clutch, Kobe.
Most clutch player of all time. He's the most clutch player of all time. That's who you want the ball in his hands. And if you look at his numbers in the final 30 seconds of games that are tied or 1 or 2 points, his shooting percentage is around 30%. That's clutch? Okay, I guess we're going to call that clutch now. There's no such thing as clutch.
ESPN Las Vegas.
Hey, Raiders on 3. 1, 2, 3.
Raiders.
Home of the Raiders fan.
Jeff Bezos is here.
Oh.
Jeff Bezos.
Wow, great actor.
Man, he's got cash, but he writes a check to bank bounce. Like, Jeff Bezos is so rich, he got divorced, and he's still the richest man in the world.
It's Cofield and Company.
He saw Marriage Story and thought it was a comedy. Steve, do you have anything you want to add about Mr. Bezos?
No, I like getting my packages on time.
All right. Ari continues with the Valentine's Day theme.
Can we keep this music up every show?
Crank up, Genuine. Come on now. Top 3 Valentine's Day songs?
I don't think so.
What? It's not?
It's more of like a top 3 strip club song?
I was going to say top 3 gentlemen's clubs song for sure. Yeah. It can double up this week.
Sure.
We have 5 days to do Valentine's Day songs. Well, you know, come on now. Be understanding. We'll have a little bit of Oscars talk later on. Our first take portion of the show will be fun because first take, sort of, jumped on the Oscars.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, we have Oscars in snippets every hour.
Oh, good.
Hashtag stick to sports. Uh-oh. We're going to be in trouble. So I thought this weekend was awesome for a couple of reasons. One, the NFL is done, and I really like the NFL. But it's funny, in radio, people will say to you, like, oh, what are you going to talk about now? I'm like, this is the best time. We don't have to do NFL. We can do anything we want.
It consumes
If you can't do a 3 or 4 hour show, what are you doing?
It consumes not only so much of our show, every sports program, every sports website. Yep. The NFL eats up everything. And not only does it do that all week, the weekend, it eats up your entire weekend, and I love it. Like, there's nothing I like more than NFL Sunday, watching every game, seeing everything going on, being on social media, like all of those things, following along. I love NFL Sundays, but there's so much more happening in the world when the NFL is not going on.
Well, Sunday midday, I was like, brunch. First brunch in months. Not that I need it, because I've definitely put on some blubber during the winter. But I was like, yeah, brunch, no NFL. But what we did have is, I think, a nice little replacement in the XFL. And I saw a lot of people on social media saying, hey, it's pretty cool. But then I saw many more who were like, product stinks. I can only watch it for 15 minutes. Come on, folks. First of all, give it a chance. One, it's football, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Two, you can bet on it. Sure. I will say this. I think books should have low limits on in-play, but you got to have in-play.
Of course.
Because I watched the kickoff of one game, and I was like, all right, I want to play, you know, let's go. No in-play. We got to get that. But I'm telling
it's
you, Adam.
It's in Jersey, so we have to import that.
Yeah. Well, not in Vegas.
Yeah.
Not in Nevada. I know you didn't watch a whole lot of it. You've got to watch it, and you've got to watch for the rules because you're going to love the freaking league because
there's a bunch of
rules they're trying out, which for you – all right, first of all, right off the bat, they've got a 1-point, 2-point, and a 3-point conversion after touchdowns.
Yeah.
The 1-pointers from the two. There's no kicks. There's no freaking extra points.
No extra points.
Yeah, right. No extra points. By the way, there shouldn't be any kicks. We'll tell you about the kicking rules. There's a 1-pointer. There's a 2. The 2 is from the 5. And there's a 3-pointer from the 10.
Yeah.
So you just trying to grasp this a little bit. What would you do as a coach? What do you go for most consistently?
2.
Okay. When do you go for 3? Just in certain situations?
It'd be very certain particular times depending on score. Trying to figure those things out. I know one of the things I saw people talk about the most is if you're down 12, then you what do you do? I mean, I think in that case you go for 3,
mm-hmm.
and then try to cut it to 3s and when you can tie with a field goal. I think there's a lot of options, and I think teams will figure it out a little bit as they go. The problem is a lot of the coaches are very old school coaches.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I think
I was watching the first game with Pep Hamilton, who's an NFL guy forever, and Jim Zorn, who's an old guy, who's an NFL guy, and they weren't really grasping it. Like Pep Hamilton goes for a 42-yard field goal, bro. Yeah, fourth why? And four. Go for it.
Well, come also,
on. No field goals. That's it. This league is designed to not kick. I'll give you the other thing. Punts, they absolutely do not want you punting.
Yeah.
You know what I'm going to do here? Because I'm really good at burying the ball inside the 20. I'm going to kick it to the sidelines, bounce it out of bounds at the 2. Nope, not allowed to do that. If it goes out of bounds, out to the 35. You know what? Screw it. I'm just going to bury it through the end zone. Right? Kick it through the end zone. Nope. Ball's out to the 35.
Right.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's all. Because if you were, whatever, if 42 on in, don't freaking punt.
Chances are you're not going
to
get
you
any
have
field
to punt
position.
To the middle of the field. Your guy has to place it properly, which means basically he's got to punt to the 10 or 11 max, because otherwise you're risking it going into the end zone, and then you have to play against a return. I love that.
The answer is don't punt.
Yep.
But teams were still doing that. It's going to take time, and there's going to be a process of trying to figure it all out.
No kicks.
Figure out exactly what is going on, and I would hope the teams will bring in just absolute math geniuses to just say this is what you do, and this is how you figure it out. I know the league told teams in advance.
Yeah.
You probably should go for 2 every time.
The 2 is the most efficient. You know how it turned out? 19 touchdowns, 11 times they went for 1.
Yeah.
Eight times they went for 2, and no one went for 3.
It makes no sense.
You're trying to break old NFL habits.
Right. And it's we'll go for 1. It's not the extra point. It's not the, 98%, whatever you're going to consider extra points to be. It's still a tough play. Go from the 5. Get the extra point. It makes no sense for teams to go for 1 as much as they are. But they'll figure it out. They'll figure out not punting. Once they get burned a couple times, once they get a couple touchbacks, and you punted from the 45. It was a touchback. You gained 10 yards. Why didn't you go for it?
Mm-hmm.
Then teams will figure it out along those.
I could see the NFL considering that. The 1, the 2, the 3, I don't think the NFL will ever be bold enough to do that. The kickoff, I think that'll be in the NFL. The kickoff rules are they moved it back to the 30. You kick off from your 30. The kicker is standing there at the 30, right, ready to boot it downfield. There's no one there.
Yeah, because the –
because they moved everyone downfield. Yeah. The return team is 5 yards in front of – the defending team, and they're at the, I think it's the 30 and the 35-yard line on the other side of the field. The other one is you have to kick it past the 20 or they bring it all the way back out to, I think, the 45.
Right.
So they're forcing returns, and they're all that high-speed collision stuff they're trying to get rid of, nope, it's basically two lines going at it. And I've read, hey, returns are actually harder, but you have to return the ball, essentially.
Yeah.
So they're forcing returns, and the complaints about the collisions, they're getting rid of.
Yeah, because they're not flying all the way down the field. They're just 5 yards from each other. It's basically like lining up in a line of scrimmage, but a guy gets the ball behind you and can just go, which is – it's cool. It awesome. Adds another dimension. It gives people back the kickoff returns that they used to love, but they don't get them because of player safety issues. This kind of fixes a little bit. Like, they've also got some timing things that I think the NFL could potentially look at, which is basically one guy's job is just spotting the ball.
What have you said all the time?
Because
how it's inconsistent?
So much inconsistency.
Well, because at the end of games, what happens?
During normal
college
run of
football
play,
in the NFL,
right? During
it's
normal
super
run of play,
slow.
They take a long time. Like, you know, the play will be over. The field judge or whoever gets the ball, the umpire comes over, spots it. Yeah, sometimes he walks, and then all of a sudden
they also mismark it all the time, yeah. Which is great.
And then sometimes the team is like, oh, we want to go hurry up. We want to go quickly here. So the ref's like sprinting to spot the ball. Like, who's deciding what pace they spot the ball at? There's no consistency whatsoever.
The XFL's got a spotter now.
They just have a spotter. He's out there wearing a red hat. He's like, I'm ready to go. He's got a ball in his pouch. He's got like a little kangaroo pouch. He's got an extra ball. He's got one in his hand. He's ready to go. It's great. Like, just line up and let's go. So that's an attempt to kind of speed up pace of play a little bit. It didn't work to the level that they were hoping. I know they want to get games under 2 hours, 45. They're around 256. Still much shorter than the NFL, which is well into the three-hour range. So they're speeding up a little bit, and I think it'll get even better as time goes along. But, yeah, they've made some innovations. I think some will catch on. Just like last time in the XFL, some caught on. The Skycam was like, what are they doing? Why is there a camera that's on the field that's moving along with it? Now the NFL has it in every single stadium.
Yeah.
So some things will catch on, some things won't. I don't think the long-term viability of the league is there, but I think there is going to be some things that are picked up by the NFL just like last time.
We're out here at Ethel M. Chocolates. Henderson, it's Cofield and Company. Some new items you can check out. And by the way, when you come in, we've got T-shirts, we've got prizes, we've got a sign-up for a chance to win tickets to a future Vegas Golden Knights game. You have the chocolate puck in front of you, right, with the VGK logo on it. That's freaking awesome. So if you're a sweetie, male or female, whatever, if they love hockey, they love chocolate, right? Who doesn't? You can get that. And also the do you go caramels or caramel? How do you say it?
I think caramel.
I might go caramel.
Okay. Well, there's an A in the middle.
I don't care.
Okay.
East Coast accent.
Caramel?
Sure.
Okay.
Pick it up. Look at it. Give a good description of it. They look yummy.
They do, with the Golden Knights logo on there, too.
Yes.
Oh, man.
So these could be eaten. They could be collectibles. You could have a refrigerator display.
I'm going to try to block the A for you so you can.
It all works. They look like delicious caramel.
Caramel
filled.
A. You can't just ignore a letter.
Delicious caramel. This sort of high level of entertainment you can actually hear during XFL games, believe it or not.
True.
That's the best part of the XFL is, and I said this on Friday, if Vince McMahon is allowed to just own the league and hand off the TV stuff to real TV people, then it has a chance to work. The TV innovations are awesome. It is so intrusive. Like, Bill Belichick would be punching people out.
Yeah.
It's great. Early on in the game that I was watching, I watched a lot of the first game. And by the way, that was in D.C. at a soccer stadium. Get them out of the football stadiums. These are 20,000-seat events. It was loud in D.C., but early on, Pep Hamilton interviewed right away. And they go to the sideline reports after not only good plays, but failures. Guy goes out there, misses a kick, and Diana Rossini's like, what happened? Let's go. The kicker's like, what? Like, I'm really disappointed.
Who are
I
you?
I kind of want to kill myself right now, but yeah, let's go on TV. And it happened all game long. The other thing is all the players on the field have helmet receivers. The quarterback can talk to the coach. There were plays where the coach is like, all right, do this. There's a defender over there. You got to make this call. You're going to go to this route. Like, the coach is coaching the quarterback through it. But here's the thing. We can hear it. We can hear it. This is like Romo next level.
Oh, yeah.
And Pep Hamilton already came out and said, he's like, well, this is interesting because now the part of our scouting is going to be watching back the television broadcast and trying to steal what they do. And they're going to do the same thing to us. So then every game, we've got to make adjustments.
Yeah, I love all of that. It's great. Now, again, these are things that are never happening in the NFL. I can't see it.
No.
But it's fun, and it adds a new dimension. And I think there is an element of people that have always wanted that next level of, like, trying to understand what the communication's like, what the line changes are like, what the blitz pickup calls are like when they try to change it at the line, what the audible and the kill plays are. Like, all of those things you can pick up. Now, it's not every single play, but they go to it enough where you get a pretty good understanding. And I think it adds for people that, you know, want that next level. I think some people are just going to be oversaturated and just overwhelmed by everything that they put out there. But I think there is a market for people. And I feel like people watching the XFL are pretty hardcore football fans. Like, I just feel like that's how it's going to be.
Well, they weren't. Not at the games.
You don't think so?
At the games, it's so rowdy. They're freaking drunkards.
Right, they were showing
the New York. Okay. Well, I'm saying, but there are going to be dumbasses who are also watching it. So they're going to have to process as well, which is actually a good thing. You can learn more about football.
Of course.
Romo's teaching everyone. So as you watch a game, don't you want to figure out? Like, when I first heard it, I was like, is someone, like, why are they talking over the quarterback? They have someone in the booth who, like, I can't hear the quarterback. No, it's the coach.
Right. It's awesome. I mean, there's a lot of very, very cool things that they're doing. And that's like I said, it's what happened last time with the XFL. It didn't catch on overall, but some of the very cool parts of it really resonated with people. And I think you're going to see that again. I'm enjoying what they're doing. Again, I don't want to get too emotionally invested in it, because we know what happened last time. It was a huge week one.
We don't have your heart broken. You're going to get emotionally invested in it.
Well, and last time, it was the first time we ever had a Vegas team.
I'll get you chocolates this week, and when the league folds in 3 weeks, you get some chocolates.
Yeah, thanks. Last time, I got incredibly into it. It was the first ever, like, real team in Vegas. It was awesome.
This is the XFL.
Standing in the middle of Sam Boyd screaming at everybody.
I was in the press box, and I've told this story before. I think I watched the first game from the press box with David Spade, which was very weird. Because it was an NBC thing, and they had all their stars out there.
You love minor league football. And then years later, you're watching USFL sitting next to Denzel Washington.
It was the UFL, not the USFL, if you want to get it correctly.
That's right. USFL was much older.
And yes, me and Denzel were together. And for those that never saw, they showed me on the screen, talked about me, and ignored the fact that I was sitting next to Denzel.
Mm-hmm. Well, because you had a J.P. Lossman.
I was a real star.
Yeah.
Which, by the way.
For a minute.
Also, you noticed the hat today, right? We'll get into it later, but... There's a reason.
Yeah, I actually didn't even put it in today's rundown.
There's a reason.
Horrible news on Phillip Rivers. On the way back, so Dana White doesn't trust Texas and yet keeps putting fights in Texas. And then this weekend we saw a fight that a lot of people thought the dog won the fight against John Jones. Why are the fights in Texas then if there's a problem all the time in Texas?
Join the conversation on Twitter at Cofield & Co.
I was a guy in Baltimore who was a no-name guy, and to meet my lady, man, and become who I am today, it was all because of her, because I stayed focused. She kept me locked in. She said no to situations.
Now, back to Cofield & Company.
Adam requested this one. He loves Firehouse.
Incorrect.
Love of a Lifetime.
So heavy. The first musical selection that I've not been happy with.
It's heavy metal. Crank it up. Heavy metal.
Good. Yes. Please cut that off.
That was actually one of the Packers coming back. Who was it?
Wait, that's singing?
No. He's not part of Firehouse. One of the Packers coming back, talking about Aaron Rodgers and Danica Patrick. We're going to get into that later on. He is asking.
Za'Darius Smith?
Yeah. Za'Darius Smith is saying that A-Rodge needs to get married.
Yeah,
that's in the Big Five.
The dumbest thing I've ever heard.
All right. He just said, a woman makes you complete. A woman takes you to the next level. We'll examine that in the 5 o'clock hour.
Ruin a quarterback's career. We'll get into it later.
I mean, it is. He just said he was just an ordinary guy, and his lady lays down the law. Now he's become a better player. The same thing has happened to John Jones and his girlfriend over the years.
Well, he's been with her since before he was before he was a star.
In that case, it hasn't worked at all. He's been a freaking lunatic, and maybe he's calmed down. Here's the other storyline. Maybe he's finally clean.
Maybe.
Now, I don't know if all these positive tests means that he just tried stuff lately or he was trying stuff for a long time, and that's why he was dominant. He is getting older. But he fought Dominic Reyes this weekend, and he's a 5-1 favorite. Most people are like, Reyes, you know, he's inexperienced, he's a good athlete, you know, guy with upside, but probably too soon for him to be in there. And then I saw a lot of you guys were like, we thought Reyes won the fight.
Yeah, a lot of people were calling robbery, and it was egregious and all these things. That's not true. John Jones, I think, showed a lot in the fact that he was in a lot of trouble the first two rounds. Reyes was the better fighter. Reyes was doing more damage. He was moving very well. He was kind of taking control. And then in the third round, it was a lot of the same, but Jones started to find his rhythm a little bit, started to kind of seize control, and then he won the fourth and the fifth round pretty clearly, which is kind of, I think, what you could say, that's what championship fighters do. When it's on the line, when they need it, they take over. Reyes, who hadn't been in a championship fight before, got to the fourth and fifth round. He'd never been that far in a fight, and he kind of slowed down. I think he felt that he already had the first three rounds won, and all he had to do was survive and not get knocked out or finished, and he was going to win. So, you know, I think a lot of things you can look at and say they were positive for John Jones. A lot of things you can look at and say they were very, very negative. But what you can't avoid is that he's had two straight fights where he was not the dominant fighter that he once was. You mentioned he's now the most tested athlete in any sport that came out from USADA. He's tested all the time.
They tested him like 40, I think it was like 46 times in 2019.
Yeah.
So basically every week.
So you could say, you know, if he was at some point taking something, which you would have to believe that he probably was based on the fact that, you know, all the controversy about picograms and everything else, the positive test, that he may not have been taking something consistently, but at some point he took something. Is that, you know, the reason now he can't take anything anymore because he's tested so often and now he hasn't looked as well? Well, you could make that argument, but then you could look back and say, well, his first fight back when he was getting tested all the time as well, was the rematch against Alexander Gustafsson, and he looked really good. And he got tested a lot before the rematch with Cormier, and he looked really good in that fight. So I think that would be an easy cop-out to say that. I don't think it's necessarily accurate. My thing watching him is he is absolutely now in a way that he never was before fighting not to lose. And he's going in there and just trying to figure out a way to win and to put himself at the least risk. And that's not something he did earlier in his career. Earlier right. in his career, he attacked every moment.
Which for most fighters, once they make tens of millions of dollars, is normal.
Yeah.
That's what they do. Minimize damage. If it has to go to decision, then, you know, you eke it out. That said, there were a lot of folks, as I mentioned a couple minutes ago, that thought Reyes won. They also went after – was there one judge they went after in particular? Was that the 49-46 judge? The other had it. Yeah. The other two had it 3-2 in rounds, and there was another judge who had it 4-1 for Jones.
Yeah, to me, it was pretty clear that Reyes had won 1 and 2 and Jones had won 4 and 5, and then you base who's going to win the fight on who won the third round. Now, 2 was close. So I don't have necessarily a problem with 2. And I think, you know, we're going to speak to Brett Okamoto later. I think, and I'm speaking for him, I guess, I think he had Jones winning the second round live during the fight, if I remember from Twitter correctly. So you could make the argument he could have won round 2. Round 3 was incredibly close again. You can make the argument either way. But to me, round 3 is the determining factor. It was 48-47 somebody. Either you gave 3 to Jones and he wins, or you gave 3 to Reyes and he wins. 49-46, it's tough to explain. But again, 2 was close enough, and 3 was definitely close enough. I guess you could kind of be okay with it. The biggest thing is Texas in general. Like, they've always had judging issues. They've always had refereeing issues. There was a lot of weird stand-ups during the fight. And then there were some really, really weird scorecards all throughout the evening. And people kept saying, man, I hope there's no controversy in the main events, and that these judges have to.
So everyone's on edge and already set up. So even if the guy had it right at 4-1, people are already looking for judge discrepancies. So I'll ask you point blank: why do they keep fighting there?
There's a lot of money to be made, and the taxes are fairly
low.
Yeah,
but if you consistently look like horses' asses with your cards down there, then like force their hand, fix it.
I agree to a point.
Bring in more experts, get new judges, import judges from the states that have better. Check that. Both judges and referees.
Yeah, I mean,
don't keep using your local guys if they're off all the time.
I agree with that. Now you can also make the Nevada has a very good commission, and they do a good job, a better job than anyone running fights. But they also have an issue with, at times, if there's a lot of criticism to a certain judge or referee, they'll throw them right back in there because they want to say, hey, we trust our people.
Right.
We're going to put them back in there. They don't really have that much accountability like you would hope for. So there's issues everywhere. Now, one of the issues with Texas, which was really bad, is that, you know, during the event, some of the judging was so bad that then the announcer started watching them. And at one point, Joe Rogan just kept saying, okay, I'm looking at this judge. He has not looked up at the ring in 20 seconds.
Ooh.
And he's like, now it's 30 seconds. Now it's 40 seconds. Why is he looking in the crowd? Why is he waving at people? What is going – the guy wasn't watching the fight. And they kept calling it out. Like, that's bad. You can't have those things happen. But the UFC does have – as you said, why do they keep going there? They keep making money there. There's huge crowds. The taxes are fairly low on them. And you can just be like, hey, this Texas commission sucks. Nothing we can do about it. But you do at some point start to look silly by continuing to go there.
Yep. This hour of Cofield and Company brought to you by the Golden Nugget downtown. Gordy Brown back in the showroom starts tomorrow. Gordy Brown, Lasting Impressions. Golden Nugget all starts up tomorrow. Limited engagement shows every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday at 7:30. Gordy Brown, Lasting Impressions at the Golden Nugget. Tickets are on sale right now, and it all starts tomorrow.
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews.